iconic American hip-hop artist Ice-T was here in the studio. The self-styled godfather of gangster rap had come to talk about a new documentary he's made about the art of rapping, which we'll be running on tomorrow night's programme. But while he was here and news about the Denver shooting was coming in, I briefly took the opportunity to ask him about his own attitude towards guns. And I asked him why he's such a defender of the right to bear arms.
Well, I give up my gun when everybody else does.
And is that
doesn't
your...
that make sense?
Well,
doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you were to, if there were guns here, would you be on to be the only person without one?
So do you carry guns routinely at home? I mean, you have a gun at home?
Yeah, it's legal in the United States. It's part of our Constitution. You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny. Not to hunt, It's to protect yourself from the police.
And do you see any link between that and these sorts of incidents?
No. Nah, not really. You know what I'm saying? If somebody wants to kill people, you know, they don't need a gun to do it.
Makes it easier though, doesn't it?
Not really. You can use you can strap explosives on your body. They do that all the time.
So when there's the inevitable backlash of the anti-gun lobby as a result of this incident, as it always is.
Well, that's not going to change anything in the United States.
Nah.
The United States is based on guns. You know, like KRS says, you'll never have justice on stolen land. So it's not going to change.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. This is episode 40. It's also part two of this two-part series. And we left off last time talking about why events in Ferguson, Missouri happened, and more specifically, what happens sometimes, even when a family, you know, does it right, according to folks like Bill O'Reilly and Mark Levin and so on anyway. There was a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode, some years ago, that dealt with exactly this subject. An episode of Family Matters also addressed it. I wish they hadn't been so true to life. But you know what? They were. And this is not new, folks. This has been going on for a long time. And we're going to talk about one of those real-life episodes. Happened to a man shopping in his local Walmart. He had picked up a BB gun. Yeah, they sell those in the Walmarts all the time, you see. Got them on the shelves of my local Walmarts, too. Plenty of young boys, and also now young girls, by the way, for that matter, they've had BB guns over the years. You know, heck, I wanted one as a kid, too. You know, lots of kids grew up with that good old, you know, Daisy Red Ryder. God, I wanted one of those back in the day. So this guy was walking around with basically a BB gun. Well, someone saw a man with a gun, yeah, and called the police. Unfortunately, I couldn't find an unedited, unspliced audio for you. Otherwise, I'd play it for you. But I did find a partial transcription of the 911 call. Well, as you may have guessed, especially those who've been listening for a while, here at the Liberals Gun Corner, partial ain't good enough. We go for the most complete source or sources, as appropriate, that we can get. So, of course, I hunted down the various pieces of that 911 call that I could find. And I came up with as complete a transcription for you as I could. I think I've got all the parts assembled. So, since that's the best source I have, here is that transcription of the call. This is between the 911 operator and the guy who called, whose name is Ronald Ritchie. Here we go. 911 operator.
Beaver Creek 911, what is your emergency?
Ronald Ritchie. I'm at the Beaver Creek Walmart. There's a gentleman walking around with a gun in the store.
Has he got it pulled out?
Yeah, he's like pointing it at people.
What does he look like?
He's a black male, probably about 6 foot tall.
Okay, what's he wearing?
Blue shirt, blue pants.
He's a black male, black shirt and blue jeans?
Yes.
Does he have a hat or anything on?
No, he's got like an afro.
An afro. Beaver Creek, did you get that?
Here's where Beaver Creek Police Department comes in. Police officer. I got that. Heading after. Rollo Ritchie. I hear police. And he just pointed. 911 operator.
What is your name again, sir?
My name's Rollo Ritchie. He just pointed it at like two children.
Okay, I do have officers there, so stay on the line with me, okay?
Not a problem.
Is there anyone else around him? Could be with him. Can you tell?
It's just him.
Just him?
Yeah.
Okay, what's he doing now?
He's just waving it around still. The next part is unintelligible because both people are talking simultaneously. 911 operator.
Okay, is there kids around him?
Rollo Ritchie. Not anymore.
Okay.
Now here, there's a pause, then lots of commotion, and you hear gunfire in the background. 911 operator.
Sir, what's going on?
Rollo Ritchie. Gunshots in the store. Police officers are here. They're on the scene. Well, there's a video of the guy who just got shot. The guy who was carrying that BB gun. His name is John Crawford. That video got made public. It's from Walmart's surveillance cameras. I watched the whole thing. It itself didn't have audio on it, but it was just video only, but I watched the entire thing, the entire video feed. At no time in any of this video feed did I see this fellow who got shot, John Crawford, point that BB gun at anybody. Uh-uh. I'm a range master. I know what it looks like when you point a gun at somebody. I've had it done to me on the range, so I know what this looks like, okay? He wasn't doing that. He was just holding it. He's mostly pointed to the ground. Yeah, occasionally he'd change the position of it so it was across his shoulder. Heck, I've done that with a long gun too. But I never saw it pointed at anyone. Yeah, actually, it looked like he was talking with someone on his cell phone. You know, just minding his own business, doing his shopping. Turns out, that is exactly what he was doing. He was talking with his significant other. There were other patrons in there too, and everyone was minding their own business. Nobody looked agitated from what I saw. Then I see two policemen rush in, gunshots like go off immediately, apparently hitting Crawford in his left side. Turns out his left side was facing the cops. Crawford falls to the floor, tries to get back up, and police are seen shooting him again. Crawford falls to the ground, and this time he doesn't get back up. Crawford later dies in the hospital from his gunshot wounds. Now, the police say that they gave him, and I quote, verbal commands to drop the weapon, close quote. They also say that Crawford did not comply with said command. Well, since I watched that video and actually heard the part where the cops show up, yeah, remember, I got splices of it. I can tell you, they didn't give him time to even realize they were there. It was basically, pow, put it down, pow, pow. That's what it looked like to me when I watched that video. And I'm not exaggerating either, folks, with that bang, put it down, bang, bang. It actually looked and sounded like it was that fast. And now, the interesting part. That 911 caller, Ronald Ritchie, he suddenly changed his story. Yeah. Before, you might recall, he said he was pointed at people like little kids, he said. Well, a month later, he's telling The Guardian, this is one of the British newspapers, and I quote, "At no point did he shoulder the rifle and point it at somebody." Close quote. Well, wait a minute. Why did Ronald Ritchie change his story like that? Now, in case any of you are wondering, yes, folks, John Crawford, the man who got shot, was black. Ritchie and both responding officers were white. Yeah. Now, I gotta wonder. I cannot help but wonder if Ronald Ritchie would have had such a concern to call 911 like that if it had been someone who looked more like him. I wonder if those police officers would have been so quick with their shoot first policy, at least that's what it looked like to me, if John Crawford looked more like one of, say, their relatives. This does not look good, folks. There's none of this that looks good. And I wish this were just an isolated incident. Well, actually, I really wish this incident never happened. Now, even the local prosecuting attorney admitted that John Crawford broke not a single law. But even though the prosecuting attorney said that, John Crawford did not break a single law, even though the prosecuting attorney actually said that, he still ended up defending the officers who shot this innocent man. Yeah. Wow. You know, this is sounding even worse than what happened in Ferguson. Now, and this time, unlike Ferguson, we've got video cam footage showing that the guy who got shot was an innocent man. He did nothing wrong, folks. I watched the video, and the police shot him anyway. You want to see the video? It's up. It's available. All you got to do is, you know, Google John Crawford police shooting. Oh, what was that city? Beaver Creek? Yeah. Google for it. You'll find the video and you'll see what I'm talking about. Oh, but this is an isolated incident? No, unfortunately, it's far from an isolated incident, folks. My friends on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, they've told me this same sort of thing happens to Oglala Sioux men and boys all the time. It just doesn't make national news. Those friends of mine, she's a lawyer. And at one point, by the way, she was the judge. Yeah, people still call her that. They still call her Judge So-and-so. Her husband? Well, he's a former cop who used to patrol that area. And he's originally from there, by the way. Born there, grew up there, the whole bit. He's the guy I spoke of before when he was telling me about the police side of all this. So you know what? They're going to know. The cops walk every time. They both confirm that. And by now, I think everybody knows about, Daniel Pantaleo, the white New York City cop who did that illegal chokehold of Eric Garner and killed him. This is back in July. Well, by now, I think you all know New York let Pantaleo get off scot-free, too. Yeah, wouldn't even indict him. Yeah, Pantaleo's white. I'm guessing Italian from the last name. And Garner, black. Selling loose cigarettes. That happened earlier this month, December 3rd. This decision by the grand jury to not even indict the cop. No punishments for cops who kill black people. Even when those cops actually demonstrably break the law, they still get a pass. Oh, we're so sorry for your loss. Yeah, it was illegal, but we're going to exonerate the cop anyway. You know, they're putting on performances worthy of a Broadway musical. Maybe appropriate given it's New York. Well, you know, Pantaleo's been crying crocodile tears all month. He's trying to say, I'm so sorry for their loss. Yeah, sure he is. Huh. Folks, what he's sorry for is that he got caught on camera. Oh, and speaking of that little point, caught on camera, the guy who did catch this on camera, he got the fatal chokehold on his camera so we all could see. Well, we know a little something about him, too. His name is Mr. Ramsey Orta, 22 years old. Guess what? The New York police are harassing him now, too. Yeah, try to trump up charges against him for catching one of, you know, theirs on film. Folks, the NYPD has lied before more than once, under oath even, so no, I don't trust their word anymore either. Remember how they lied about a fellow named Abner Louima, the Haitian immigrant in 1997? Yeah. Well, the officer that was searching and arresting Mr. Orta reportedly told him, karma's a bitch. What goes around comes around. Ain't that something? Oh, and they're also trying to go after his wife now, too, you see. Oh, but they don't retaliate against people who blow the whistle on them now, do they? Nah, couldn't be. Yeah, right. And Hitler loved the Jews, too, didn't he? You know, I find it interesting to note that there was another case of a police officer chokeholding a guy. Yeah, this is in the recent news, too. Well, fortunately, the guy who got choked this time, a guy named Jared Dotson, he didn't die from it. And just like the New York incident, someone got camera footage and got it to the press. Uh-huh. The officer in this case, one Frank Phillips, was fired immediately. well, wow, you know, looks like the cops did deal with one of, you know, their own pretty immediately there. And yeah, it's a good, I think it's a good thing they held one of their own accountable. Personally, I think that's a very good thing. So why here and not in New York? I don't know how many of you have been to New York. I've been there a few times. I doubt I'll go back for a long time, but given my own experience there and what I've heard from many folks who've been there, New York has a reputation of being a mafioso-like town. Unfortunately for New York, can't say that reputation is not well-deserved. I mean, look at it. You got the five families. You know, they've been in the police department, the city government, the unions for God knows how long now. And there's example after example showing how New York cops and mafioso act like bullies and thugs. But, you know, this thing with Jared Dotson and the officer Frank Phillips who got fired immediately, that was in Tennessee. You know, Tennessee's definitely not New York, right? Just about anybody in Tennessee will tell you that. They definitely do not want to be mistaken for New York. So, you know, what was it? Was it just Southern hospitality that got this cop held accountable for his actions? Well, I read that article, all of it, about what happened there in Knoxville. It happened in the Knoxville area. Apparently, Jared Dotson, the guy who got choked, told off the cop. Yeah, he told off the cop. This is according to the police. And furthermore, the police say Mr. Dotson physically grabbed the cop's legs. Now, I don't know if that happened. You know, the cops do like to say, well, he attacked me. I was in fear for my life, to cover themselves. They like to do that a lot. They like to say that a lot, even if it's demonstrably not true. And a witness told the Washington Post that Mr. Dotson did not resist the police. You know, sounds a lot like what they were saying about Eric Garner, too, in New York. These cases look pretty darn similar. Until you take a look at Jared Dotson. I looked at the footage of now former officer Frank Phillips chokeholding Mr. Dotson. Now, obviously, in this podcast, you can't see that picture, but, you know, Jared Dotson looks to me like he could be Justin Bieber's older brother. Yeah. I hope he's better behaved. Well, I'd really like to think that the fact that Dotson is white didn't have anything to do with Frank Phillips, also white, being fired here versus covered up. I'd really like to think that. Part of what makes this hard to swallow is, well, this is the same sort of a justice system that let that 16-year-old blonde kid, Ethan Couch, you remember him? Yeah, he got away with killing somebody for, what was it called? The affluenza defense. Yeah, y'all remember that? The affluenza defense? No jail time. Ethan Couch killed four people. His penalty? 10 years probation. Yet, Brian Banks didn't get such judicial leniency. Oh, no. You may have heard of him, by the way. May have heard of Brian Banks thanks to the Innocence Project. He was 17 years old, right about the same age as Ethan Couch, you know, Mr. Affluenza. Brian Banks was a star high school running back, had a football career all lined up at USC, the whole thing. Dude was all set up for, like, mega amounts of success. And then a girl he knew falsely accused him of raping her. Yeah, false rape accusation. He served prison time for a rape he never committed. Had to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life, too. Talk about a scarlet letter, folks. That's about the worst you can get in this country, you know, sex offender registry. Well, 10 years later, he was exonerated. But, of course, by then he'd lost his chance at what would have been very likely a lucrative football career. I mean, guy could have been, you know, maybe the next Walter Payton, for all we know. For 10 years, his life was a living hell. He'll never get those years back. They're gone. Oh, and according to Mr. Banks, his attorney at the time told him back then, you're a large black male. You don't stand a chance in court. You better take a plea deal or it's 41 years in jail. This attorney was herself a black woman, light-skinned black woman. Now she's a judge. Go figure that. And I remind you, Brian was still a minor at the time. He was 17. wasn't allowed to even discuss it with his parents beforehand. Unlike Ethan, Mr. Affluenza Couch. And don't think that black people in this country aren't aware of all this, by the way. They are. They've known this kind of thing for hundreds of years about our justice system. This is the one, of course, that you know about it is. The one that says if you're white, you're all right. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're brown, well, okay, maybe you can stick around. But if you're black, get back. This is very dangerous, folks. I'm going to tell you when we come back how this is really a powder keg. And it scares the hell out of me. We need to discuss this. And we're going to be back shortly and do just that. Since the Ferguson, Missouri shooting inspired this episode, both parts of it, it's only appropriate that we get some input from a cop from St. Louis. I remind you all that Ferguson is a suburb of St. Louis. Well, this cop's name is Reddit Hudson. He is a former St. Louis policeman. Today, he works for the NAACP, and he chairs the something called the Board of the Ethics Project. Okay. I should say the board of something called the Ethics Project. Sorry about that. Well, this appeared in the Washington Post on December 6th, just a few weeks ago. Here are Officer Hudson's words. As a kid, I got used to being stopped by the police. I grew up in an inner ring suburb of St. Louis. It was the kind of place where officers routinely roughed up my friends and family for no good reason. I hated the way cops treated me. But I knew police weren't all bad. One of my father's closest friends was a cop. He became a mentor to me and encouraged me to join the force. He told me that I could use the police's power and resources to help my community. So, in 1994, I joined the St. Louis Police Department. I quickly realized how naive I'd been. I was floored by the dysfunctional culture I encountered. I won't say all, but many of my peers were deeply racist. One example. A couple officers ran a website called St. Louis Cop Talk, where officers could post about their experience and opinions. At some point during my career, it became so full of racist rants that the site administrator temporarily shut it down. Cops routinely called anyone of color a thug, whether they were the victim or just a bystander. This attitude corrodes the way policing is done. As a cop, it shouldn't surprise you that people will curse at you or be disappointed by your arrival. That's part of the job. But too many times, officers saw young black and brown men as targets. They would respond with force to even minor offenses. And because cops are rarely held accountable for their actions, they didn't think too hard about the consequences. Once, I accompanied an officer on a call. At one home, a teenage boy answered the door. That officer accused him of harboring a robbery suspect and demanded that he let her inside. When he refused, the officer yanked him onto the porch by his throat and began punching him. Another officer met us and told the boy to stand. He replied that he couldn't. So the officer slammed him against the house and cuffed him. When the boy again said he couldn't walk, the officer grabbed him by his ankles and dragged him to the car. It turned out the boy had been on crutches when he answered the door and couldn't walk. Back at the department, I complained to the sergeant. I wanted to report the misconduct, but my manager squashed the whole thing and told me to get back to work. I, too, have faced mortal danger. I've been shot at and attacked, but I know it's almost always possible to defuse a situation. Once a sergeant and I got a call about someone wielding a weapon in an apartment. When we showed up, we found someone sitting on the bed with a very large butcher knife. Rather than storming him and screaming, "Put the knife down!" like my colleagues would have done, we kept our distance. We talked to him, tried to calm him down. It became clear to us that he was dealing with mental illness. So, eventually, we convinced him to come to the hospital with us. I'm certain many other officers in the department would have escalated the situation fast. They would have screamed at him, gotten close to him, threatened him, and then any movement from him, even an effort to drop the knife, would have been treated as an excuse to shoot until their clips were empty. I liked my job, and I was good at it. But more and more, I felt like I couldn't do the work I set out to do. I was participating in a profoundly corrupt criminal justice system. I could not, in good conscience, participate in a system that was so intentionally unfair and racist. So, after 5 years on the job, I quit. Since I left, I've thought a lot about how to change the system. I've worked on police abuse, racial justice, and criminal justice reform at the Missouri ACLU and other organizations. Unfortunately, I don't think better training alone will reduce police brutality. My fellow officers and I took plenty of classes on racial sensitivity and on limiting the use of force. The problem is that cops aren't held responsible for their actions, and they know it. These officers violate rights with impunity. They know there's a different criminal justice system for civilians and police. Even when officers get caught, they know they'll be investigated by their friends and put on paid leave. My colleagues would laughingly refer to this as a free vacation. It isn't a punishment. And excessive force is almost always deemed acceptable in our courts and among our grand juries. Prosecutors are tight with law enforcement and share the same values and ideas. We could start to change that by mandating that a special prosecutor be appointed to try excessive force cases. And we need more independent oversight with teeth. I have little confidence in internal investigations. The number of people in uniform who will knowingly and maliciously violate your human rights is huge. At the Ferguson protests, people are chanting, "The whole damn system is guilty as hell." I agree, and we have a lot of work to do. Wow. Amen, Officer Hudson. We'll be back. And now for the powder keg. This, folks, scares the hell out of me. You just heard from former St. Louis, Missouri officer Reddit Hudson. His story is, at least to me, chilling and downright scary. You know, there was another time back in the 1960s when, according to my training and experience, police were delivering Rodney King-style beatdowns to black people on a regular basis. Yeah. As a matter of course. This was in Oakland, California, where my grandma used to live. Right across the Bay Bridge from San Francisco. Used to go there all the time. Well, these black people who were getting these beatdowns finally got tired of getting beaten to bloody pulps for doing 10 over, or doing what we call a California stop at the stop sign. That's more like a pause than a full stop. Now, what should that get you? That should get you a $50 traffic citation and a court date. But if you were black, it also got you dragged out of your car and beat with billy clubs till you're a bloody mess. Sometimes with broken bones. Sometimes even unconscious. Remember, we're talking 10 over or a California stop. Those are minor traffic violations, folks, not felonies. 10 over. California stop. Come on. Well, it shouldn't surprise you that they decided enough was enough. And they decided to actually do something about it. Y'all remember the Watts riots in Los Angeles? Maybe you've heard about them. Well, the folks in Oakland saw that too, and they said, there's got to be a better way. Sure enough, there was. Here's what they did. In accordance with California law at that time, they started open carrying shotguns and patrolling their own neighborhoods. Uh-huh. Yeah. They'd listen to the police radio. And any time a black person was getting pulled over or otherwise detained, these folks would show up. Now, they'd keep a respectable distance, but close enough to be seen. And they were holding their shotguns at port arms. By the way, that means not pointing at anyone, folks. They're just holding it like they teach you in boot camp or basic training. I know, because guess what? That's what they taught me, too. And that's what these folks were doing as well. Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. If you had an epiphany that they were exercising their Second Amendment rights under the law, good for you, because that's exactly what they were doing. I know. What a concept, right? Huh. Well, like magic, those beatdowns got reduced down to a trickle of what they had been. Funny how that works, ain't it? You've probably heard of these folks, and I have mentioned them before. They called themselves the Black Panthers. Yeah, that's what they were really about, folks. My dad knew them personally, so I'm fortunate enough to have a primary source. Here's how my dad himself has put it. Son, they didn't have any other choice. It was very prejudiced back then. And with this tendency of our police forces to get even more militarized, and with their clear tendency to go right for their guns and even shoot first, if it's a black person, I have to wonder now, will we see a repeat of the Black Panthers? And if that happens, this is the scary part. Will they finally decide to start shooting back? That's a sobering as hell question, folks. Scares the shit out of me. Yes, you heard me say that. Because unfortunately, it seems we actually have an answer. Just a few days before Christmas. Just a few days ago, a week ago? Two New York City police officers were, in fact, shot. Matter of fact, they were killed sitting in their patrol car, execution style, by some deranged lunatic wacko. I will say wacko because he was. His name was Ismail Brinsley. Yeah. Apparently he's got major mental issues, this Ismail Brinsley. But the scary part here is that he also claimed that this was revenge for the aforementioned Eric Garner's death at the hands of NYPD officer Daniel Pantaleo in that fatal chokehold. Yeah. The two murdered officers are Rafael Ramos and Wenjin Liu. I hope I'm saying your names right, fellas. And ever since then, it seems police officers are on high alert all over the country. Apparently a whole lot of cops are now just convinced there's going to be this rash of black people going around just shooting at them. As a sort of a quote-unquote racial revenge. Unfortunately, there was another shooting at cops that happened in Los Angeles. There weren't any fatalities on that one, but just the same. Cops are on high alert now. Question, is there a rash? Does this constitute a rash of black people going around just shooting at cops? Well, Ismail Brinsley looks like one deranged lunatic. The one out in Los Angeles, that was the second one. Those were both terrible. But those are the only ones I've heard about. I'm not seeing this rash that these cops are afraid of. And really, folks, I hope that rash never happens. I hope we never, ever get there. Seriously, folks, I really, really hope we never get there. Because if we do, a lot of people are going to die. And I suspect a lot of them will be cops. I don't want anyone to die. Well, okay, Osama bin Laden and his crew, yeah, they're exceptions. But you know, besides those kind of people, you know, besides that, no, I don't want people dying. That'd be civil war, and I don't think anyone wants that. Well, I sure as heck don't. We've been there once before, I remind you. That said, we've got to go back and look at the reason the founders put the Second Amendment into the Constitution in the first place. Remember, folks, this is not about hunting or sport, because if you didn't hunt back then, if you didn't hunt or fish, you didn't eat. So it ain't about hunting or sport like they like to say, like the antis like to say. No. Rather, the Second Amendment is about making the authorities think twice before they try to oppress you. Now, just imagine a neighborhood and the residents, all law-abiding. Imagine they're all armed to the teeth. Sounds like Texas. But anyway, the neighborhood's armed. They've got 308 Winchesters, 30-06s, you know, maybe some 338 calibers, perhaps even a 50 cal or two. The cops tried doing a raid like they did on that veteran in Washington, D.C. a couple years ago. I'm talking about what happened to Sergeant Matt Corrigan back in, what was it, 2012? 2 years ago? Or maybe like they do a raid like they did to Lynette Phillips in California just last year. Maybe they break into your home at 3 in the morning and start shooting like they did with Ayanna Stanley Jones's home in Detroit, Michigan. Ayanna was a 7-year-old little girl, asleep in grandma's arms on the couch. Yeah, 7-year-old girl sleeping in her grandma's arms on the couch. The SWAT team breaks down the door and starts shooting at her and her grandmother. Little Ayanna was killed in her sleep. 7-year-old girl. You should see the pictures of Ayanna. She was a precious, cute as a button little girl. And yeah, she was black. Now, gunshots are going off after one of these raids, okay? Remember, the whole neighborhood's armed. The other neighbors get awakened by it. They see a SWAT team invading someone like Ayanna's home. And these armed-to-the-teeth residents have had enough. I think you can finish painting this little picture. There's nothing good about it. As John Wayne would probably say, doesn't paint a pretty picture, does it? Is that, folks, really where we're heading? We nearly ended up there in Oakland, California in the 1960s. It came perilously close. Is that really what we want? Well, I sure hope not. Well, if you feel the same way I do, if you also sure hope not, then what do we do about it? We talk and we wring our hands and, you know, all these statements of sympathy, but what the heck do we actually do about it? Well, here's what I think. I think if the police forces get the idea that the whole neighborhood might be armed to the teeth, maybe they might not be so quick to lead with their SWAT team tactics and this bully boy shoot first policy that they seem to have too often nowadays. That's, I think, why we didn't end up in a full-scale war in Oakland back then. The cops saw that the citizens were armed and could possibly fight back, 12-gauge style. And they decided, whoops, hey, they got guns too. Maybe we better start being a little nicer, huh? And that's what happened too. Right up until the Mulford Act got passed in California. Then it was back to the beatdowns. And that's what I mean when I say to people, an armed society is a more polite society. For a little while there, the cops had to think about their own personal safety if they went too far. And as a result, yeah, for that period of time, they started being nicer. They didn't like it, especially with black residents, but they did it. The beatdown slowed to a trickle. The Black Panthers therefore had no reason to use their guns. just like that neighborhood in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And by the way, this is no new idea. I didn't come up with this, folks. This is not my idea. So don't go trying to say, oh, Cowboy T, you're coming up with these dangerous ideas. No, this ain't my idea. It was just as true way back in the day, too. And I'm talking way back in the day. The KKK, which, oh, by the way, often had the local sheriff's department as members, they weren't so quick to raid majority black neighborhoods when they knew that everyone there was armed. They didn't want to get shot either, say. And that's why a permitting system was instated. Right along with the gun registries. Disarm the Negroes, see, and then you can have a field day on them. No opposition, we just took their guns. Yeehaw! Yeah, Jim Crow at its quote-unquote finest, if you can call it that. And that's why the Deacons for Defense came into being during the Civil Rights Movement of the 1960s. Yeah! If you haven't heard of the Deacons for Defense, look them up on Wikipedia. That's their call. Their name is the Deacons for Defense. It's worth your time. The cops wouldn't protect the Civil Rights Marchers from the Klan. A lot of the cops were members of the Klan. But those Klansmen weren't quite so quick to attack the marchers when the deacons were present. And I suspect that's what would happen today with neighborhoods whose residents were, you know, well-armed. There's this outfit called the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, or JFPO for short. They put out a series of comic books called the Grandpa Jack Series. I got one of these in my hand right now. One of my fellow Virginia Citizens Defense League members gave it to me. It's called Gun Control is Racist. Now, this may be in comic book form, folks, but the subject material is deadly serious. It takes you through the whole history of gun restrictions in this country and the motivations for those restrictions. Does this in a pretty succinct fashion too. It's something like 22 pages long. It's worth your reading if you get a hand on it. And that's really a major thing here, folks. Gun control in America has its roots in racism. It leaves minorities and other individuals defenseless against hateful aggression, be it official or otherwise. It gives power to mobs, criminals, and governments gone bad. And that, folks, is why I believe it's time for black Americans to give up this silly, illogical, and I will say foolhardy, possibly get you killed notion that guns are bad. We got too many black Americans who swallow that poisonous Flavor-Aid. And this is especially true among black women. There's a guy, Ken, Black Man with a Gun Blanchard. He talks about this in his book, too. On the contrary, given recent events, I have firmly come to believe that every last black family should own at least one 308 Winchester or 30-06 or something similar. You know, something with a little power. A 7.62x54R Mosin Nagant. You know, they're, what, $179 nowadays. That's another good choice. Those Black Friday gun sales we talked about last time? Yeah, remember those? Right after Thanksgiving, those Black Friday gun sales? They're great for this, by the way. They're absolutely terrific. When any sort of thuggery comes after you, it comes at you, you need to be able to defend yourself. And as current events have shown us, sometimes that even includes, and this is to my own astonishment, from the police. At least if you're black, even if you've done nothing wrong, like John Crawford at that Walmart, the guy with the BB gun. So, yes, get a gun. Get a gun. It's your right. And personally, I think it's your responsibility. Get trained on how to use it. And that includes tactical training, meaning how to actually fight and defend yourself with a gun, not just how to target shoot with one. And those classes are, in fact, available to the average person. Consider reading Ken Blanchard's book. It's called Black Man with a Gun. Well, Mr. Blanchard is himself a former cop. Federal cop, no less. guns. Oh, but I don't like the NRA. I don't care. I don't give a rat's posterior if you don't like the NRA. I'm not a fan of them either. Guess what? That's totally irrelevant. Yeah, I said it's irrelevant. Whether or not you like the NRA is irrelevant to you owning a gun. What does matter is that you get yourself a firearm that you like, get trained in it, and practice regularly with it. You may need to save your own life from an illegal home invasion. And that's because, well, yeah, black lives matter too, just as much as the white ones. The cops are now saying, well, blue lives matter as a counter to black lives matter. Yeah, blue lives matter too. You're darn tootin' they do. What too many of those blue lives seem to forget is that black lives matter too, just as much as theirs. Not more, but most definitely not less either. Now, what else can we do? The other thing we need to do is elect politicians that'll put a stop to this shoot-first mentality that's pervading our police departments. Folks, the cops don't need to be soldiers. We already have soldiers. It's called the Army. What we need, rather, are politicians that will protect and reward the good cops who expose the bad apples in their ranks. I'm talking about examples like the aforementioned Officer Reddit Hudson of the St. Louis Police Department. There are good cops, folks. Plenty of them. I've met some of them, so I know they're out there. We cannot have those good cops afraid to come forward and blow the whistle. We need them to come forward, big time. And we need to elect politicians who will back them up when they do, with force if necessary. And above all else, we need to stop automatically assuming that just because someone's black, they must automatically be a criminal. And that includes police officers. A lot of them need to learn that too. You heard a former cop saying so just a few minutes ago. Oh, by the way, let's get one more thing straight, here and now. No, I'm not anti-cop like Rudy Giuliani and the New York police chiefs want to claim that some people are. No, that's I'm not anti-cop. That's silly and ridiculous if you think that. I'm not against the profession of policing. No, not at all. When done properly, it's a noble profession. Yes, it is. Seriously, it is. What I am against is the shoot-first mentality that our police officers are repeatedly getting taught. Yeah, they're taught this now. That's what happened at that Walmart. They were following their training to shoot first, following it to a T. I'm against that. I'm against the militarization of the police. They're not the Army, and they were never meant to be. I'm against this us-versus-them attitude that I see too many cops taking nowadays. That's got to stop. You know, as Frederick Douglass said, a man's rights rest in three boxes: the ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box. Frederick Douglass's words. Now, let's hope we can rein this in before we ever get to that last box. The jury box doesn't seem to be working given recent events, so we need to stop this at the ballot box. That's our job as voters, folks. And that means you need to vote in your local elections, too. Not just the national ones. The local ones matter just as much. That's where your sheriff's getting elected. Your mayor. Your city council. Your county board of supervisors, or whatever you call them. Your state legislature. Your governor. All that matters. All of it. And we need to do that. Because that final option, that's just too dangerous. I don't ever want to see that. Ever. Got that? We straight on that? Good. But as the Founding Fathers advised us, that option still got to be there. And they were right. And that's because the key to freedom is the ability to defend yourself. If you don't have the tools to do that, folks, then you're at the mercy of those who would oppress you. And the tools for that are guns. And every liberal should support this. If you really believe in liberty like you say you do, and that includes equal justice under the law, yeah, liberals, you should. History shows us time and again, that's the only way you can actually keep liberty. Ain't no other way. my progressive brothers and sisters. That includes you too, by the way. Remember what happened to a lot of the Occupy Wall Street protesters? A lot of those were your fellow progressives. Remember what happened to them? Seriously, think about that. That might have been some of you. Lives matter, including black lives. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. Till then, in addition to all the stuff about safe shooting, which I always remind you, also remember to be glad for the ones in your life that are close to you. As recent events have shown us, you don't know how long they're going to be with you. So, if you can, celebrate the new year with them. Thanks for listening.